This is a Pinball News production.
So, please welcome. Were you running someplace?
Please wait to welcome. Hold on a second to welcome.
He's coming. Blood a pumping.
Well, he can do a lap. He did that pretty good. Yeah.
Okay, the best intro.
I'm not giving you mouth to mouth.
I was starting to fall asleep. Sorry. 5 o'clock. It's happy hour. I guess this is happy hour. I hope everybody's happy. I'm happy. You know what? Hobbits are shipping. How could I not be happy? So I'm going to do a cartwheel off the stage. It'll be the last cartwheel I do. After this, it'll be called Jersey something else pinball, because I won't make it. It's really great to see everybody. And, you know, Texas for me is, I think it's the best show in the world. I really do.
He doesn't just say that every time.
I don't say that at every show I go to. Mike Pasak will probably be mad at me, but...
He's going to be mad anyway.
So I know.
Don't worry about it.
You know, at his show, the whole reason to go to the show... I almost stepped off the thing here. The whole reason to go to the show is to play games. And, you know, Mike closes the game hall... so that you could go listen to idiots like me. And why would you do that? So over here, the games are open. And I made myself a couple of notes. Paul McKinney, Ed Van Deveen, Kim, and Ken Kemp, and all the other people that make this show possible. I just want to thank them. It's amazing. I have an idea what it takes to do something on a big scale. And, you know, this show, it's a lot of work, but you can see everybody how they appreciate it. Johnny Norman, are you cold?
No.
What are you standing there like this for?
He always folds his arms during your presentation.
Where's my hobbit?
Yeah. Well, how many people have hobbits on the way to them? So, you know, that's pretty good. How many people got their hobbit so far? Because I noticed, yeah, so... You know, there's a whole bunch of them shipping. We have a slideshow with some pictures. We'll get to that. All right, so why don't you go to the first slide, Butch? Everybody knows Butch Peel, one of our amazing electrical engineer, one of two of our electrical engineers. Eric is the other one, and Butch.
He says he's the only one, but I still have that paper. I really do.
He believes he's the only one. And that's Eric. Right, Chris? So, you know, Chris knows. That's his brother. Hey, what is that? So, that's a box. I don't have those here. I'm sorry. That's a box of one of my favorite pastries. That's called Svingi San Giuseppe. Anybody know what that is? Nobody knows.
I'm glad I
wasn't
alone.
Today's St. Joseph's Day. So it's the Feast of St. Joseph today. And, you know, St. Joseph is the carpenter, and those pastries are part of the feast. And every year, whoever's name is Joe, we go over to somebody named Joe, and we pull their ear for good luck. Who's Joe? Any Joes? Joe Mama. Right. So before I pulled on Joe Newhart's ear, I don't see Joe Newhart. He must be nursing his ear after I pulled on it.
Hey, not only did I not know what those were, but I was the one trying to get Jack to eat at In-N-Out Burger yesterday. It didn't work
right
too well.
So I didn't go to In-N-Out yesterday. I went there today. And I took John Ellion from Jersey to In-N-Out Burger, and I brought Mirko there. And Mirko makes our playfield, and he came from Germany with his wife and his two kids. And now I hooked them on In-N-Out Burger. So we're trying to get an In-N-Out Burger in New Jersey. So
good luck with that.
We'll see how lucky we are. All right, go ahead. What do we have? So, it's a really great site, not only for all of us, for me too, because I come in the building and there's the final test line, and those are all games burning in overnight before they get put in boxes, and there's a row behind them. So, I would think in the next week or two, about 100 games will be out of the building. This is a little different than when we built Wizard of Oz. When we built Wizard of Oz, games went out. They had light board problems. They had problems with castle doors. They had problems with monkeys and witches. Hey, James, how are you? I didn't see you. How you doing? So we hit the ground limping, and this game's a lot better. You kind of learn after the first game what to do and what not to do. So, you know, we're really, really proud that games are on the line and shipping. Yeah, so I kind of walked around the building. That's a shot of our unique drop target assemblies. So if anybody played the game, did anybody get a chance to play the game today? Yesterday? Cool. How do you like it? Good. Good. Which, again, is a lot better response than we did get from Wizard of Oz in the beginning. Wizard of Oz took a little bit to develop because the software was like a box of lights when we shipped the game. This game has software in it. It's a real game, and I'll talk about that as we go along. Just some shots of the assembly line. You know, I always feel like weird taking pictures with old people working there, but believe it or not, people work there, and this stuff doesn't happen by itself. So, you know, I'll go after hours or Saturday, whatever, and take pictures of things, and I'll walk around with my mouth open wondering how we make all this stuff happen in the building. So that's those are a whole load of cabinets. That's the Smaug gold artwork that's on those. Some games packed up, ready to go. What's next? Oh! This slide wasn't supposed to be in here. We were not going to reveal that we figured out a way to build games on the ceiling of our building. And we increased our efficiency more than 100%. And obviously our competitor found out about this also, because they showed some slides of them building games on the ceiling as well. I can't even imagine that happened, but you know, I think they were also looking for that unicorn and the tree and all of that
stuff. Sincerest form of flattery and all
right.
That, yeah.
So anyway, we really shouldn't have shown that. Sorry. So there's me. And you know, a couple of weeks ago, now that Hobbit is shipping, I got a chance to get on the road and go places with the Hobbit game and unbox it and be at different events in different places. And I really love that the most about what I get to do. This was up at the Pacific Pinball Museum a couple of weeks ago in Alameda. And this couple, that's Steve Callister and his wife Rebecca. And they came, there were a whole bunch of people that came to see the game. But they drove from Mountain View, which is about an hour away. And as they were playing the game, Rebecca said to me, you know, I'm pregnant. I said, yeah, right. And I don't know, you know, I'm not going to say anything. What do I know? So I said, how you doing? And she said, well, I just went in labor, you know. And I said, yeah, really? She said, yeah, I kind of felt that that was going to happen. But, you know, we wanted to come here to meet you, and we wanted to come and play the game.
That's a double take moment.
So, you know, this was about 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. Go to the next one. So I'm sleeping, and this text wakes me up at 12:30 at night, like roughly 4 hours later. And they had a beautiful baby boy. His name is Evan.
I thought it would be Bilbo. And I was just going to guess.
They didn't name him Jack, thank goodness. So mother and baby, that's his second child. And there was a little article in the local newspaper there. And I would read it. It's really funny. Steve kind of quoted, you know, how thrilled he was to see the Hobbit game. He didn't even...
He was more excited that there was 30-plus modes in The Hobbit than he was about his
right,
son being
born. Right, the quote was...
No, everybody's okay, you know, they went all great.
Right. My wife and my son are really great.
30 modes!
It was like, the game has 30 modes, and I can't believe it, and all of that stuff, so... I tell you, when people talk about pinball people or fans or whatever,
You're going off there.
Yeah, it's Jen calling me.
Oh, that does sound like a Jen.
Hey, Jen.
We're a little busy right now.
Hi.
We'll call you back.
Say hi to everybody. You're live. Hello. Say hi.
She can't be speechless.
Jen. Hey. All right. Say hello.
Hello.
There she is.
Well, so the whole room said hello.
Hi.
Okay. All right. That's all Jen can say.
Buenos
right
dias.
Now.
Yeah, all the rest of them.
All right. All right. She says, have fun. All right.
That's what we do.
I called her before looking for something. She finally called me back, so whatever. All right, Butch, keep going. So along the tour in California, I drove from San Francisco down to Murrieta, and this was a stop that we made along the way. It was at a place called Meltdown Comics, and it was on Sunset Boulevard. It was a Friday night, and I didn't realize that I just stepped into the middle of the Twilight Zone, where I wound up being on like a 2.5-hour broadcast talking about the Hobbit game. And the guy there, did anybody see that thing? Okay, cool. God bless all of you that were able to stay through that.
I tried, but it was like 3 hours, man.
Yeah, I know. My wife...
isn't that the most interesting man in the world?
Yes.
I mean, stay thirsty, my friend.
Yeah.
Isn't that him?
Yeah, that's
cool.
That's one of the guys from the movie Robert Kircher, right? Yeah. Nice, really wonderful guy. And we had some people from Warner Brothers come down because they never saw the game before. You know, I think the people at Warner Brothers that administered this license to us, I don't know if they ever thought I would finish this game because, you know, we've been paying them a lot of money and we've been getting a lot of assets from them, but I even outlasted the guy that was our rep. It was so long that they put somebody new in that position. So there's Ed Van Devine. Ed, thank you for a really great show. I appreciate it. And I appreciate everything you do. Thank you. So in this picture is Pat Choi, our distributor in Southern California. He's on the left, and the guy on the right is the guy from The Hobbit. Or maybe it's the other way around. I don't know.
Stay thirsty, my friends.
But it was really a fun event. Then we were actually at Pat's house, and he hosted about 60 people at his home. And Pat has an amazing collection. That guy in the picture is my Uncle Alan, who lives on Coronado Island. So he drove up from San Diego to be at the event, and it was pretty cool. We had a fun time that day. There were a lot of people there that are customers of ours for many years, and that was, you know, the first time I got to meet them, so that was a lot of fun. And then we were at on Sunday, because I was out there like more than a week. On that Sunday, it was the Orange County Pinball League, and they had their league day, and it was out there, so a lot of the guys got to see The Hobbit and play it for the first time. We really didn't have anything on the West Coast ever. So Pat sold a whole bunch of games during that whole trip, and he was sorry to see me go because of that. He's really a great guy, and he supports us really well. So one of my favorite things about The Hobbit is that games that are going on location now, they're working, which is really important, and they're making money, which is also really important. So we have a bunch of games out for a couple of months, and we ask the people that have them out on test, you know, to send us audits, the audit screens, you know, of how many games are being played on them, how long a game takes to play, and there's a lot of statistics in the game. If anybody that has a Wizard of Oz knows, the game collects a lot of statistics. And, you know, here's just a screenshot. This was 1 week of a game that was on a location, and it had 635 games at $1 a game, and the ball time was, what, 2 minutes, 33 seconds?
2:33.
So game times have been, you know, between, you know, two and a half to, you know, four and a half. Game time is always like this big argument that I think my life is ending. What's going on?
Yeah, it did.
I don't know what just happened.
It wasn't just me. I thought so, too. I was like,
oh, whoa. Thank you. Thank you, God.
Sorry.
I have another couple of games left, please.
If you're going to blaspheme.
I got to see my granddaughter, please. So, who was that? Was that you, Jim? Screw around with that stuff. I don't know.
We'll get you later.
I could, yeah, that's
right.
You
know where
you
live.
So,
next.
This is another one. This I think I know where this game is, too. This game is in Asbury Park at the Silver Bowl Museum. And this game, at the time, you know, this was March 2nd, it looked like,
March
or
2nd.
Whatever it was. March 2nd. Can you see that, Butch?
Yeah.
This game, so that meant this game was out about a month. And it had 6,658 games on it. And it was running at an average bowl, a game time of 3 minutes and 38 seconds, right?
Yep.
So, you know, we have them out there. We've been testing them. We've been playing with them. We had some ramps that came apart. We sent them all back to the vendor. They fixed them all. We've been putting them on games. And we've been boxing up games and shipping them out. So I think this time, rather than test the game in your basement, we took the extra time to really test the game out on location and have us beat the crap out of the game. Because, let's face it, when we showed the game in October, of 2014 at Expo.
Wow.
You know, it was a lot different game than the game that's inside. But I can't, and we can't, just say, okay, it's good enough, ship it, get rid of it, you know, and we'll go on to the next game in 3 months. You know, we're really trying to do the best that we could possibly do in delivering the greatest product that we could deliver. And I'll talk about game three also in a little bit.
The ramp issue, you know, that's something when you make your first prototype games and you send them to these shows, they make the first few of your ramps a lot different than they mass produce them later by the thousands. So what really happened there is they started building, mass producing our ramps, and our vendor came back to us and said, wow, these things are taking us forever to weld. You know, is there some way we could, you know, do something a little simpler and we could get them out to you a lot faster? And so we approved a change to it that made them into tack welds, and they didn't hold up very well. So, you know, it's just something you learn as you go. You try to make it, you don't want to make it difficult and just say, you know, the heck with you, vendor. You put your people on it and make the ramps. You're trying to work together, so mistakes will happen. So that's what happened with the ramps, and we had to go back and have them make right.
Yeah, and we all know that the most critical part in a game is the part that you don't have, right? So with that amount, the vendors that you have and the management it takes to work with the vendors and drawings and all that, we've all been through that story, so we're not getting back into it, so... So let me turn this part over to Butch and let him go through it, and then I'll come back, and then we'll have some questions, and then we'll go to happy hour, okay?
Sounds good. Yeah, you got an invitation to dinner there while you were talking.
Would you like to come to dinner with us, Tex-Mex?
I don't think that's Jen. So.
Not from Jen.
No, not from Jen. So how's everybody doing? You need to get up and run around the thing once now, too? Like Jen? No. I'll be a heavy breather. You don't want that. Like as Jack said, you know, I've been working for the company since 2012. I helped with the Wizard of Oz, beginning of Wizard of Oz. Hobbit, I got to see all the way through all these 3 years. Has it been something like that? A lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of changes. What's out there though is a pretty damn good game. I think you all agree. And again, I like to echo what Jack said about the organizers here and even amplify that a little bit if I could. That anybody that works for this show, anybody you see out there that's brought games, I mean, walk up to them and say thanks for what you do, because you know, we wouldn't have this place to come, hang out, talk pinball with all you people of the same, you know, mindset and enjoy ourselves for a weekend like we do without everybody that puts these shows together. And Jack and I are just blessed to be able to come to these shows. We hit the ground running and everything's set up for us. We walk around, play pinball, we laugh, we joke, we talk with people. It's the best job in the world, quite frankly. I don't think I need to tell you that.
And you know, Chris brought his game.
Yep.
Chris from Kingpin,
one
of our distributors, right?
Yeah.
So Chris, stand up, say hi.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for bringing the game.
If anybody wants to order a Hobbit, come over here and see Chris, because he'll take care of you. And, you know, we appreciate it.
But, yeah, every opportunity you ought to thank these people because these shows are great, and it's wonderful to get together with all you guys. I love meeting all these new people. I love seeing all the old faces that we've seen, and it's amazing. Old faces, that didn't come out right. You know, those other faces, the familiar ones. There, that's a good word. Familiar faces, the old familiar faces. Some of them are old still. Yeah, they're like me. My face is old. Anyway, yeah, it's a great opportunity to get together and talk pinball. We're going to talk a little bit more in case you haven't heard all you want to about The Hobbit. I've got a few more things I can tell you about it now. Software has become a little more mature now. It's not old. No, mature. There's a lot of things going on in the game. It's not done by any means. I've got a version of the manual that's going out on a CD with the games right now. It's the first version, and we will, of course, continue to update it as we do with the rules and things like that as the software progresses. And you've seen how we support our games and how we bring out new software releases at these shows and have a great time with it. So there'll be a lot more coming. I think there's already 850 hyperlinks in that document of the manual. It's the Wizard of Oz is the worst manual I ever wrote, Jack. There you go. So just met that requirement. A lot more color, a lot more cool pictures and things to reference. So, yeah, I had a blast writing it. Not so much of a blast making all these changes, but, you know, that's the way it works. So I'm going to go over tests and diagnostics, a little bit of the menu system, and then I'm going to show you some of the game-specific settings, things that we can change in the game. And with those settings and some moving of posts and things like that, how you can customize your game. And then I'm going to talk just a little bit about game rules, such as they are at this point in time. So you guys have seen a lot of this. You saw me open the game earlier today, some people. The menu system, very similar to the Wizard of Oz. You open up the coin door. You've got a switch inside here that you can pull the knob out and enable all the coils. So when you go into test mode, you can test anything, all the high voltage stuff, and you drop balls around the play field. You can run flip the flippers. You can drop a ball into the pop bumpers, see how it works. Drop a ball into a VUC, and it'll kick the ball out. You can see how the strength is working. You can try that four or five times, make sure everything's working the way it should be. And you can also get your finger hit really good if you grab a ball that's getting kicked back or something like that. So have to be kind of careful with it, too. The main menu, very similar to the Wizard of Oz. As you go into progress into the modes here, into the different menus, you can go into tests, go into switch tests, and then go into matrix switch tests. And then in the what's left of the screen after all of these buttons are shown, you'll see a little preview of what the menu is going to look like. And then when you go ahead and hit the matrix switch button, then you'll see the full screen version of it. And as with Wizard of Oz, we have a rendition of the Hobbit playfield on the side here, so you can actually see every switch's physical location on the playfield. And the color of the square on those locations will tell you exactly the status of the switch. So red switches are red, browns are the tan colors, and the brown colors are optos. And there some optos, obviously, are normally open with nothing blocking the beam. Sometimes they're normally closed with something blocking the beam, and they become active when something allows that beam to make to the phototransistor. So you can test all your switches here, just like we did with the Wizard of Oz. We have all of the tests, same for the coils. You can run through again. It shows you on the playfield rendition where the coil is that you're currently firing. That's the A man drop target. And you can do things like set it to repeat, manual, running, those sorts of things. LEDs, now we've got different LED system with the Hobbit. I'm sure you guys are happy to hear that. I know Jack's happy to hear the Wizard of Oz, we had a lot of light board issues. So the Wizard of Oz I hate to use the analogy, but it's kind of like a string of Christmas lights. They're in series. One of the lights is pulled out, and you know, the whole string would go dead. So same thing applies to the Wizard of Oz lighting, and that if we had a problem with one of the driver chips, it would cause all the data to stop at that point, and none of the lights downstream would get any further data. They weren't burnt out or anything, but just one driver going bad in that string was enough to knock out the rest of the string, so it caused some significant headaches. We have, the Wizard of Oz has has all RGB LEDs, even under the plastics and even the feature lighting. In The Hobbit, the feature lighting, that's all the inserts and things like that, and indicators on ramps, things like that, like the action button or the ring button on the lockdown bar. Those are all going to be RGB LEDs. And in this game, we've got brighter white general illumination, kind of more like the old Williams games used to be, where they had the lights on different circuits for doing features and showing you where to shoot the ball rather than the stuff that just lit up the sides of the play field and brought light to the colored plastics, things like that. But they are still kind of labeled here. There are ordered LED tests. You can see them in the list here. The LEDs that are used for GI, they're all assigned an RGB because they're kind of programmed that way, so that, you know, maybe sometime in the future you could possibly put some RGB LEDs in there. You know, we might be able to offer that as an upgrade or something like that, to where you could, you know, replace all your GI boards with LEDs and make them RGB LEDs and have a complete game like the Wizard of Oz did. That's something to think about, just something to an eye towards the future, putting in the hooks for that now in the software, so there wouldn't be a major undertaking later on if we were able to develop the hardware and provide that. So if you look at the different types of lighting in the game, you've got GI wiring. If you were to flip the play field up like this, then the bottom of the play field's here. It's what you'll see when you flip the play field up in the cabinet. This is the GI wiring is now all done from a single board we call the bag board, the bus and GI board. And this board sits in the middle of the play field underneath, and all the wiring goes to all these places. So you can see why there's going to be so much wiring in this game, because when I lift that play field up and you see all that massive stuff, because all of these are going to single little LEDs under the plastics, under the sides up here, going to some of the flashers, because flashers in our game are considered GIs also. They're just an intensity-controlled LED that we can make act like a flasher, so we put those under the flasher domes. But all of those come from that single bag board there. And then that connects down through the harness to your CPU, and so the USB can control all those lights, and we can not only turn them on and off, but control their intensity and make them dimmer or brighter also. The RGB LED boards now are kind of modular in design. We did three different boards that control those, and they also plug in via an Ethernet cable to the same USB that's controlling this, so that's how they get their communications. But then all of these run in harnesses that go out to these separate places under the playfield, and there's like three harnesses per controller board. So it's two completely independent systems now for GI and for feature lighting. And the feature lighting now is all, and the GIs are all done in parallel, so there's no serial, you know, one goes out, that one is out. That's all the problem is. If you have a board here that went out, then maybe, you know, a couple of these other branches might go out as well. But it's very modular in design, and so you know no more of the game going all down just because a single driver chip went bad. So we have, as we did in Wizard of Oz, that we have device tests for things that just don't kind of fit into just a kick-only thing like a coil or something that lights up. They do their own thing like the witch and the spinning house and the Wizard of Oz did. We've got the device submenu for, first up here would be the pop-up mechs, and those are the beasts that are underneath the playfield, the four of them. So when you start that test, you get this screen here. If you enable that high voltage, like I showed you first thing, you know, popping that switch out, then when you hit your enter button, whichever one of these is highlighted is going to pop up out of the play field. And then you can test the switch. There'll be a little blue box that comes up over the top of it, and it'll turn black when the switch is not activated, and it'll go blue when you activate it. So you can test the switches, and you can drop it back down and pop each one of them up in succession. And these will go green down here to tell you that the switch is hit and that the switches, pop-ups are in their up position. And there's what the mech itself looks like. So the up switch is a little roller switch here. When this guy pops up, this little blade here pushes against that roller and tells the game that the pop-up is actually above playfield now. And then there's a switch in the target that you activate for smacking the thing, for scoring it. There's a device test for the drop banks. We have three different drop banks, and this is where You know, these are crazy to watch because a lot of stuff going on. Those individually resettable drop targets can set and reset very quickly. So you can imagine, you know, you got, what, 11 drop targets there. For every one of those drop targets, there's a big coil to set it up and a little coil to knock it down. So there's 22 coils right there. And that the old Williams matrices, they only used to have, you know, what, about 64 of those. So you can't imagine how much effort it takes and how much, you know, how many cool things you can do with drop targets that can do the things that these do. And so just running the test is very impressive because they set up, they drop back down, dink, 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 they move all the way around.
And I just want to say, you know, the game makes a lot of noise.
Yes, it does.
You know, the people that start the game, Martin's shaking his head. You know, I got calls from people that said, the game goes, you know, I woke everybody
Something's
up.
Grinding.
When the game starts or there's something grinding or there's noise and everything like that. You know, when they're in an arcade, you really don't hear these things. And years ago when I started selling games to the home, I had people calling me saying, you know, there's like a that my game does, right? And you're calling me why? Well, I don't like it making a Well, you know, that's the sweeping sound, and that's what the sound, you know, translated through the sound system. But this is not a sound system issue. This is mechanical. So the game has a lot of stuff in it, and it's going to make some noise. So if you don't want to hear the noise, plug in your earbuds or your headphones, and this way you'll hear the music and the sound and the speech calls. You won't hear the noise.
And that's part of the thing you get when you do something brand new like this. I mean, we sent these games last year to Seattle, and they had one of their techs, guy that's been in pinball for a long time, and it just scared the heck out of him when he turned it on and those drop targets reset. He turned it off immediately. He thought something was catching. You know, he's like, you got to hear this. And I'm like, oh, that's normal. Oh, really? But, you know, new normal for these guys because you're doing things that have never been done before. There's a couple of tests for the Dragon just really quickly. You can bring the Dragon up, and the first test will just, you know, use your up and down volume buttons to rotate him back and forth, check his limits left and right, make sure that he's not going to run into anything or that his limit switches are working. And then you can test his mouth also. And that's the mech inside here has an actual servo.
That looks like, really? I mean, that looks like post-mortem
really,
on you know, the T-Rex over at the Natural Museum or something like that.
Yeah, you'd be afraid to find out what's all under that plastic and those sculptures of mech.
Is that going to break?
Heck no.
Oh, okay.
No problem.
Well,
you'll see.
Okay.
And if it breaks, we'll fix it. So that's what the manual's for, right? That's what they tell me anyway. Yeah. Okay, so system settings. I'm just going to show you the different systems in the system settings and game settings. Now, these are how you kind of can make your game your game and dial it in, make it the way you want it to play. System settings are kind of common. You see a lot of these in Wizard of Oz also. There's a balls per game sort of thing. You can decide how many game balls you want in a game. The grayed out settings here at the top are going to be pindemption settings eventually to where we can use the game for a pinball redemption game. And same thing as Wizard of Oz. It'll be able to set the game on times, and you can play for a certain amount of time with different types of timers at the end as to how the game ends, whether it dies suddenly when the timer goes out or whether you get to play the rest of your ball, those sorts of things. You can set all that up to give tickets for different completed objectives in the game and those sorts of things. So that's coming later, so it's just kind of grayed out now. Ball save time. Keith Johnson hates ball save, so it's always off in default. I'm always turning it on because, you know, especially at a show, you got to give somebody a chance to play again if their ball drains, especially on a game that one of your key kit skill shot attempts can send the ball right down the side or down the middle of your flipper. So kind of important things. We have kind of tied to pindemption, a money in auto start where you can put money in the game as soon as it's got the sufficient amount for a game, it starts the game. And most of those are all turned off, auto launches and timeouts and flipper using that for auto launching, you know, timeouts. Things are going to be set off, competition mode, those sorts of things. Chase ball, that's letting you decide whether if a ball gets stuck or not and the ball search can't find it, whether it just sits there trying to find it forever or if it'll send a ball out and continue the game. So that's set to default on. You can adjust the LED brightness in the game, so you can set it to at least three different settings there, a darker and a normal and a super brighter. Match percentage, you know, the same sort of fare that we've had in how many tilts. One note here is tilts are
except
per game.
Except if it's Chris's game. If it's Chris's game, it's set to tilt. Just breathe on it.
Yeah.
Right?
Way to go. He had those tournament guys working on it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. It's rough.
And those guys rearranged the furniture. Seriously. I mean,
I was standing next to it before and it tilted. And Gabe, where's Gabe? Is he here? Gabe looks at me like I'm the father of the game.
Yeah.
And he's like, what's wrong with your game? It tilted. I said, listen, after it leaves my house, I can't do anything about it. It's like a kid. You know, I'm not responsible for it. So, you know, the operator has it set that way. And there's nothing wrong with that. We're just breaking chops a little bit.
But, that's not a good
analogy. You know, Gabe said he played it, and the game tilted. Boo-hoo. So.
All right. So, yeah, our tilts are per game. That's an uncommon thing. Most of the tilts in the other games
are
spread per ball, yeah. So, you know, you get three tilts per ball. We have a couple of tilts per game. So that kind of comes into play here in the game settings. So if you look at the lock difficulties and things that you can set up, these are how you really can dial in your game, make it play the way you want. This is going to grow. Yeah, dial in. Yeah, that's a play on words. Anyway, this gets more and more as the software gets more mature, you can do more and more things, but a lot of different difficulty settings where you can decide how hard it is to lock balls, how hard it is to start multi-ball, how hard your kickback relight is, those sorts of things. And then as you go on down, you got all the things for broken devices that you can tell it. And then one of the settings I was going to call out specifically here is one of the things they just added in 606 of the Wizard of Oz is an allow tilt warning award. And what that does, if you got those two tilt warnings per game, if you're playing along, one of the things that you can be awarded is another tilt. So you can shake it up. If you see that you got another tilt, now I can play rough again and finish this ball off. So it's kind of a unique thing. It's kind of interesting to see that. Coil settings, of course, we can adjust every coil in the game as we did with Wizard
of Oz. You can set them hot enough that you could break half the stuff on the game, right?
Send the ball through the back of Smaug's head,
right.
If you want to do that.
Right. So if you do that and break stuff, right, then you call up Frank and you say, you know,
just playing it and Smaug's head fell off.
Smaug's head broke into 40 pieces all by itself.
There's this whole.
Yeah, you know, we'll probably send you
pinball.
Another Smaug's head because who argues? You can't win an argument with a customer. I know that.
He's always right.
For 40 years of doing this, you can't win an argument with a customer. And we wouldn't have built the company if I argued with every customer. In fact,
absolutely.
I'd probably lose my voice.
Absolutely.
It's good to argue with some customers.
Yeah, it's fun to, in fact.
Right?
So, in our physical adjustments that you can do to the game to make it easier or harder, there's a
like
couple.
Like Charlie.
Of either side. Yeah. And then there's one post here that we'll ship a plastic fir tree plug that can go in here. If you'd like to take out the post between the flippers, I believe the game will ship with the post in, and you'll have that in your coin box if you prefer not to have a center post there. So just some things that we can do to physically change the game and make it more conservative or liberal. So a few rules.
Really?
Skill shots? Yeah.
Wait a minute. I got a trivia question before that.
Okay.
Anybody want a Hobbit trivia question? Okay, so I have a couple of collectible things that I brought. So let's see. All these people texting me. Stop texting me. Bjorn has the ability to shapeshift into what creature? Raise your hand. First hand up there. A bear. He's correct. Give him this.
And that was easy. You'll get half a barrel.
All right, let's do another one. What is the name of the forest? Now, listen, I have to look down, so you look up. What the hell? I didn't ask the... What is this? This is not Jeopardy. I'm not Alex Trebek. You know what?
Don't answer in a form of a
question. What is the name of the creature?
Crazy. Huh?
Bilbo encounters in the goblin caves. That lady right there. Yeah, I think she's right. Give her that one. Good. All right, Butch, continue.
Continue. Oh, okay.
We'll be back. I have a few more with mine. I have a few more pieces. Collectibles to give you.
Got a couple of Sharpies there. Yep. Yeah, you can give all kinds of things away.
Also, you know what? Butch, you're going to get into the rules? Is that what you're getting into?
That's what that rules thing meant, yeah. It's a,
we have this...
rules.
We have this... what the heck is this thing? This is a...
That is a rules flowchart.
Thank you. I only own a pinball company, so what do I know? No, it's a rule sheet, and we printed them out. So there's not enough here for everybody, but if you want one, come up and take one. There's a bunch of them. We'll have more of them. Chris has some, I think, at the booth, right? And we're going to send you more, unless you ate them all already. You might ate them. Okay. Well, we'll get more. And there's brochures up there if anybody wants any. So
a few rules. Is it okay to go? All right. Okay. Take your microphone away. Okay, here's your skill shot. Moving dwarf targets is one of them. When you start off here, you use a ring button to select, and it'll highlight and show you what your skill shot's going to be. But the first one is a moving dwarf target. So one of these will be popped up, and it'll pop, drop all the way across here, and it's just a moving target. And you try and launch the ball and hit that target. You can also select the elf target. So with a lighter kick, you can drop it over here and try and hit as many of these. You know, you can get one of those cool ones that hit the top and roll down and drops all three targets. You get more points for doing that. A moving beast return lane. So the in lanes for the flipper, the return lanes for the flipper here, there's dual on either side. One of those will be lit orange, and it'll be moving across here, and then it'll come back, and it'll move across. And so a really light shot to hit these, or a more heavy shot to drop it into the one that's lit, and to time it perfectly. You get a good score for that, too. And then lastly, so far anyway, I think we may have one at some point where you drop it into the wind lance and shoot that, but that's coming down the road somewhere. The lock rollovers here. If you can send it in a nice gentle arc and go over the lock rollovers, then you can get a big score and be ready for multi-ball as soon as your ball's finished making the skill shot. So Smaug multi-ball, you spot those lock rollovers. Like I say, if you can do that with the skill shot, you're ready to go. The difficulty setting will decide whether you've got this. You got to spell it lock and then shoot the ramp, or if it one time a lock will light the ramp for all three lock shots. But you'll know it's lit because the underneath the ramp here it'll say lock and it'll be a green light behind it. So you make the lock rollovers, and it'll remember, you know, if you've done it two or three times and you haven't shot the lock even once, it knows you've made those, so you can make that shot after you've spelled lock two or three times. And you're just trying to, you know, put the ball over the rollover buttons. And then there'll be lit jackpot shots. I think the Vuck was one of them for Smaug because it's right next to him. For Beast Multiball, you've got the in lanes here will be lit. They're kind of like toggling right now. So when the ball comes down one of these wire ramps or falls in by way of bouncing around, if it's lit, it'll kick the beast up that corresponds to that, and you try and make a hurry-up shot on it. It's only up for a couple of seconds. And if you hit it, you score it, he'll drop right away, and you'll see that up on the dot matrix, or dot matrix, listen to me, the LCD, and you'll see that you made that shot. Do that with all four of them, and then the beast multi-ball will begin. It'll kick a couple more balls into play, and they'll start popping up like crazy, the three or four of them with red lights underneath them, and they become their own jackpot kind of shots. Like I say, toggling, if one of these is lit and it goes through and you miss it and it drops back down without being hit, the next time the ball goes through there, it'll turn it on again. The next time it'll come through, when it's lit, it'll kick the beast up and give you a chance to hit it again. So you can work on that as you go. And during Smaug, sometimes those multi-balls can stack, and it's pretty cool too. You'll be playing Smaug multi-ball, and all of a sudden all the beast starts popping up and the ball's going crazy. A lot of fun. Different modes. There's 30 plus modes, as the new father was saying in the news article, and so there's a, on the ramp there's a book and a mode cutouts in the ramps here. So the left ramp has a book cutout in it. When you qualify modes by you can there's dwarf modes, there's man modes, there's elf modes. There's a Gandalf mode, a Bilbo mode, and a Radagast, which is this Vuck right here. So you can knock all the dwarf targets down, and you'll have qualified dwarf modes. And you can see your progress towards that up on the LCD also. Same thing with elf and man. And when you've qualified those modes, when you've qualified any of them, they'll start paging through here on the book display. And so the first one will come up, And next time you shoot the ramp, if the mode is book is lit, as the ball rolls past the front, you'll see the page turn, and it'll be the next qualified mode. So you can use the left ramp to select the mode you'd like to start by shooting it repeatedly. Once you've got it on the mode you want, you can then shoot the right ramp, which will be either lit for lock or mode. If it's lit mode, it means you haven't spelled lock yet, and you can kick up in here and it'll drop the ball into the wind lance, and that's how you begin the actual mode. And the mode is then timed, and you'll see the timer counting down on your book display here, so you get a kind of a more of an eye level view of it while you're playing. And you play until the timer runs out, or sometimes on some of the modes the time will light up underneath the ramp here, and shooting the ramp will give you an additional amount of time to finish and complete all objectives. Everything will be lit that you need to hit in like an orangish flickering kind of torch looking light, and so you just move through the modes and you know, try and get all 30 of them going. God bless you if you can do that. Yep. Ring button, last thing. Don't talk in my ear while I'm talking. Selecting and highlighting your skill shots, you can use a ring button for that. It can be set to start the game. You know, a lot of people can't figure out to start, push a start button. You'd be surprised how many. So you can light it up and you start the game by hitting it on top of there. Collecting points during the game, it'll charge up during the game. You'll see it glowing blue. That means you need to hit it and collect those points. You can light objectives, like sometimes it'll light Thorin or something like that. Now there's a cool mode where you, or a cool way of use it to delay and lock a mode functions. So if your mode's lit on your left ramp, but you want to stay on that current mode that you've already selected, you can delay the mode function by hitting the ring button, and it'll tell you up in the left middle of the LCD what the ring button is going to do. If it says delay mode and you press it, you got about 30 seconds where the mode will turn off here, and you can send the ball over this ramp, and it will not page the book to the next mode. You can, same way, you can delay lock on the other side. If you want to try and start a mode rather than lock the ball, you can, when the ring button says it's set for delaying lock, you can punch it and it'll turn off the lock function here and allow you to go down and start a mode rather than starting multi-ball. And of course, the last thing it does is fire the wind lance when you've got the ball teed up in this corner down here.
All right, so thank you for that. Hey, how many armies fight? Oh my God.
Five.
Yeah. That's right.
So.
Yeah, maybe that one was too easy.
How many letters in the word dwarf? Yeah, that's a toughie. Okay.
That's too easy.
You could get a Sharpie for that, or half a bottle of water, yeah.
So what's the name of the forest that Bilbo and the dwarves enter? Yes.
Give that to her.
Watch it. It's got sharp edges.
That one's a little heavier. Okay. Anybody have any questions for us? Thank you, Butch. That was pretty good. Yes.
Given that this is your favorite pinball festival, give us a pinch off pinball for free.
Given that this is my favorite pinball festival, can I give you any hints about game number 3? Okay.
I know this
Gabe
one.
Gabe tried beating me out of that, and you know. So I'll tell you this. I promise game number 3 will be on time. Okay?
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
And I promise that because we haven't announced what date it's going to be. So, when I know it's done, then we'll announce when it's done. So I can make that promise. That's pretty big.
And it's designed by Pat Lawler.
It's going to be huge. And we're making pinball great again.
Epic.
And we're not building any walls. We're building bridges in our company, you know? So,
and we're going to get somebody.
Not building any wall. We're not getting anybody to pay for it.
Yeah, we
are. Not new people either. You're not paying for it. So don't worry. Johnny, you have a question? What is it? Yes. Hang on a minute. Hold on.
He doesn't need a mic.
I don't need a mic. Since you started the company in 2011,
I told you.
How many millions
of
dollars have you spent up to date?
I don't know. I thought you were going to ask me how much did we make, or how much did we lose, or how much did we, you know. We spent a lot of money. I'll say that. And I don't know. Maybe one day I'll do one of these things somewhere where, you know, I'll talk about all that kind of stuff, but I'm not ready to take all that baggage and unpack it yet. You know, I'm still going forward, so I'm not kind of looking backwards. But it's significant, you know, to start a pinball company, to think about it for a moment, which I don't want to do, but to think about it for a moment, you know, here I was that I said, hey, you know, I'm going to start a pinball company, and I don't really have any money, and I don't have a factory, and I don't have a game to show you. But, you know, if you want to buy the game and you want to give me the money, we'll build a game for you, you know. So the road I went down, I've used the Ralph Waldo Emerson saying of, you know, I'll just paraphrase, you know, don't go down a road that exists. Go instead where there is no road, you know, and make your own kind of road kind of thing. I don't recommend it to anybody, really. Yeah.
Stay on that road.
I don't recommend it. You know, I was at a show like this, and I weighed 147 pounds. And, you know, I had people like Darren and Jim Walsh and a lot of other people calling up, finding out if I was going to be dead or alive, or, you know, the amount of stress and aggravation. I never wanted any celebrity part of it. It's still weird to me, but I get it. All I wanted to do was really make great games. That's all I wanted to do. And I didn't think about the public side of it. I didn't think that I'd be vilified or, you know, criticized to the extent I was. I realized that, you know, we made promises based on things people believed at the time. And, you know, sometimes they work out and sometimes they don't work out. I remember I was at a show and I scratched my nose like that. And somebody wrote on the social media that I was lying because I scratched my nose. Listen, I have a big nose. I had an itch. What can I tell you?
No, his nose is small, actually.
So, you know, I don't recommend it. I don't recommend it for everybody, you know. How big? You have big hands, right, Butch?
Yeah.
You have big hands.
And Jack's the tallest guy I know.
You have a big mouth, too. So give me another question. But, you know, again, just, you know, I thank everybody and I thank God. And, you know, we just keep going forward and that's it, you know. Yes, Charlie.
Is the journey still a reward?
You know, there was a Steve Jobs kind of quote. You know, the people that worked at Apple years ago, and I'm kind of an Apple person from the 70s, and the people that worked for him, they had a saying, you know, the journey is the reward. And it wound up in the Hobbit game as
Glinda, in
The Wizard of Oz. It's not in the Hobbit yet. It might be.
Oh,
you
God,
might
no.
hear that in the Hobbit, you know. The journey is the reward. And, you know, Keith used it so much that I hated it. And I had him pull it out of there so you don't hear it much at all. The journey is still a reward, yeah, because I get to be with all you people and have a lot of fun. And, you know, I'm having a great time. So I'm very lucky to be able to do this for 40 years in this industry. I mean, you know, when you think about the commercial side of my life for the operators, there's no game in the whole commercial side of the industry that's more difficult to build and design than a pinball machine. That's why not everybody is building pinball machines. So, you know. I heard pinball's hard. I never said that, but it is. I heard that.
We still have the passion. We're still,
yeah, I mean,
still burns.
Yeah. Anyone? Questions? No? So, I guess, you know, this is, what else do I have? You can come up and take those rule sheets. You can take brochures. You can come and play our game. I have a flight out tomorrow morning, so, you know, I'll see everybody later. And thank you all. I appreciate it.
We'll be out around the show anywhere you see us. You want to talk about pinball? Come on up. We'll talk. Thanks for coming.